What's happening, mommies and poppies, boys and girls, people all over the world watching the Barroom Network? This is a special Draft on Tap episode. I hate to say this, Danny is not on this episode, but I do have a very special interview with Emery Hunt, and that's coming up in just a minute. Just want to tell you that after the interview, which is about 45 minutes long, I believe, we'll talk about a few other things and hopefully get some interaction with the chat room, as people aren't normally aware that we are doing a special Draft on Tap on a Friday. But because the Willis twins needed to take the night off, and weekend sports betting tips also needed to take the night off, it's Johnny Santucci's wedding anniversary, and he forgot all about it and called me a few hours ago and says, "Man, I can't do a show. Forgot it was my anniversary." So we'll be talking about that on Tuesday night on Bare Their Souls with Dan and Tooch. I figured, you know what? I got this interview with Emery. I was going to share it next week, but let me put it together tonight and share it with all of you. And those in the chat room are joining us now. Cliff, what's happening? Bruhaw. I love Bruhaw's name. And Bruhaw says, "I love it when my YouTube notifications are working in sync with the content." Yes, that is nice. Look at that. We are 13 days away from the NFL draft, and our content is just going to increase more and more. So I'm very happy to provide this interview with you with Emery Hunt. And again, after the interview, we'll discuss a few things. One of the things I wanted to talk about was there's a lot of talk about the Bears and Hard Knocks. I want to share my opinion on that. I got some clips from the Montez Sweat interview with Chris Long on Chris Long's podcast, Green Light, and I want to share those with you. And then also we'll talk a little bit about the Atlanta Falcons potentially being penalized for tampering with Kirk Cousins and what that might do with the Chicago Bears. So without further ado, let's go to my interview with Emery Hunt. All right, as promised, with me is Emery Hunt. Emery, you've been a longtime friend of the Barroom Network. Thanks for coming back on. I think this is your fourth or fifth appearance. I really appreciate it, man.
Man, I appreciate you, man. It's good to see you looking well, and it's glad to be back on. Because, again, this is – I love how you guys break stuff down here, man. It's a fun show to be a part of.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we take a lot of pride in the information that we carry and a lot of diverse opinions on football. And we've got shows for the student of the game, and we've got shows for the casual fans. And one of the reasons that I love having you on is that – you speak regular football for us. You evaluate hundreds of players, but you when you evaluate them, it's not a lot of the jargon that scouts use. You and I can relate on certain things that perhaps I wouldn't with somebody who studied the game for a long time. So I really appreciate it. But before we start talking about some of the players that I'd love your opinion on, I want to talk about you, because I followed your career now for maybe, what, 7, 8, 9 years. You're at CBS Sports now. You've always struck me as a guy who is a very hard worker, an entrepreneur. And when I saw you on CBS Sports, you've been with them now, what, 2 or 3 years?
2020, so 4 okay. years.
Hot, check it out, how time flies. things are going great, right?
Things are going great, man. And it's, you know, it's fascinating because someone like you has seen where I have come from to where I am now. And it's been a fun journey, because sometimes when you're in it, you don't get a chance to really step back and look at things because you're constantly on the go. And, you know, from where football game plan started to when I got my first opportunity to do to call college games, to getting, you know, brought on CBS as a guest spot for certain segments, to that becoming a reoccurring thing, to then ultimately saying, "Hey, man, we want you on our network." And, you know, this past football season was, you know, did a sideline analyst role on a college football game on CBS Sports Network, and did the same thing for the Hula Bowl. So it's wild to know that, you know, I started from YouTube, started from a website, started from YouTube, and then here I am. It's crazy. I still get stuff from fans and friends that they'll screen capture a picture of me on like a Roku device or something like that when they're scrolling their channels, and you know, I'm up there with Sportsline and CBS Sports HQ. I'm like, I could never get used to seeing that, you know.
I hear you, man. That is awesome. What a success story you are. You know, we here at the Barroom work with a lot of people who are trying to emulate careers like yourself, you know. And so when they hear your rise up through the ranks and where you are now and that you started with YouTube, that's very encouraging and inspiring to people. So really appreciate you sharing that story. The YouTube channel is on the screen. For those of you listening on the audio podcast, it's youtube.com/footballgameplan, all one word. And that's where you can find Emery's YouTube channel. Plus, he just recently released his football guide, which I love. You know, I have to admit, I don't get it every year, but when I do get it, you know, I always love it because it's so easy to consume. You know, there are a lot of other good draft guides out there, but this is the one that I like the most because it's easy to consume. Plus, you look at certain players that some of the bigger publications sometimes overlook. You have been a busy man. How many players have you evaluated? And give me an idea of some of the names that we have not heard in the mainstream media evaluations on.
It's funny because, you know, I go to all 9 All-Star games, and I'm sad that the NFLPA Bowl is no longer in existence because that was one of my favorite ones out there in Pasadena. So this, it would have been 10. Like last year, I went to 10. This year, it's 9. But I've gone to all 9 All-Star games. And my whole thing is, you know, if I'm going to be at these All-Star games, you know, the lower ones, I'm talking about the FCS Bowl in December, College Gridiron Showcase first week of January, Hula Bowl, Tropical Bowl, before I go to an HBCU Legacy Bowl, before, you know, the Senior and Shrine Bowl, man, you know, I better have reports on at least 95, if not all, of the players that are there. Otherwise, I'm wasting my time going to these lower All-Star games. I could just go to the Senior and Shrine and Combine like everybody else. But I want to put boots on the ground because scouts are there, so I want to be there. And I'm constantly running to the scouts, and they constantly see me at all the different All-Star games. And, you know, why not? You know, and that's something that I became, you know, really passionate about because you see somebody that, you know, at a lower All-Star game, and you think they stand out, and you know, okay, this guy is doing well here, but then he gets a call up to another All-Star game, and now you can cross-check, okay, what I saw at the other one was he was just a, you know, big fish, small pond. Now he's up with comparable athleticism, and okay, he's still standing out. So you really get to cross-check everything. And if you are a loyal subscriber of the guide to people out there, I started to put these things out digitally in 2020. And so if you are, you know, buying them by from then to now, you're sitting on 4,300 individual scouting reports. Wow. So it's insane. So last year I did over 1,000. This year we're over 900. And it's fun to put together. It's the most taxing project of mine to put together. But once it's done, prime example, one guy I saw last year, and I have a bunch of stories like this, but this is the one that happened last season. It was two. It was College Gridiron Showcase. I'm like, man, this kid, Colton Dowell from UT Martin, was outstanding. Now, keep in mind, I see guys live before I see them on film because I don't start doing the draft stuff until January because during the fall football season, I'm covering the NFL. I'm calling college games. So I don't do draft-specific stuff until the All-Star game circuit, right? So I'm seeing guys live before I start watching their film back in February. And so I'm like, Colton Dowell is killing these guys out here at the College Gridiron Showcase. And I'm, you know, texting, you know, colleagues. I'm like, hey, man, this dude Colton Dowell, nobody's taking me serious. Oh, he's just like small school dudes. So fast forward to the draft. It's like, and I'm in CBS at CBS Studios and getting ready for day 3 coverage. And before we get on, I see the Titans draft Colton Dowell. And everybody's like, well, who the hell is this? And boom. Scout report. I agree. And I'll tell everybody, like, hey, you better go check out the Tennessee game because he was baking those defensive backs. So it's not surprising. And then, you know, and this is about the getting around to different spots. So last summer, so August of 2023, I did the I was the MC for the GLIAC Media Day, Division II conference out in Detroit. So that's, you know, Wayne State, Grand Valley State, those schools like that. And I'm talking to Northwood at the time, was in their final year of the Glee Act, speaking with the receivers. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to jot some of these name downs of these seniors that I talked to. So I graded this one kid, John Hall, out of Northwood. And then fast forward to, you know, the draft last season, the Seahawks signed John Hall, and Seahawks beat writers and Seahawks, everybody's like, why would they, who is this dude from Northwood? And bang, here's a report on who's this dude from Northwood. And so is that type of information that you get in the guide. So when the Bears sign someone, let's say this year, they take Cole Burgess from Cortland State.
There's, I just happen to have the page open to Cole Burgess. That's wild.
Cole Burgess is right there. Or if you want another Division III guy, North Central out there in Illinois. You know, they went back and forth with Cortland in the national championship game at the Division III level. This dude is outstanding, D'Angelo Hardy. So you have guys that will pop up on the radar, and trust me, I'll have a report on them.
That is wild. You mentioned Cole Burgess, and the guide that I have delivered digitally, the page is open to Cole Burgess, height 5'11", weight 194, school Cortland State, strengths and areas of improvement. Outstanding, outstanding. And by the way, you mentioned that you've evaluated thousands of players. People can order those back issues. It's right there on the front page of the guide. So if you want to, you know, have these guides from, what was it, 2020 you mentioned when you started?
2020. Yep.
Yeah. So those are easy to order. Let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears. They are in a unique position with the first and ninth pick. There's no questioning. It appears there's no question, although maybe you have some inside information, that Caleb Williams will be the first pick overall. Do you agree that that's a fait accompli? And if so, what is your evaluation on Caleb?
I do feel like it's going to be Caleb. It better be Caleb Williams. Otherwise, why would you get rid of Justin Fields, right? So it better be Caleb Williams. And he's my number one quarterback in this class. And you know, I haven't given out a lot of 90 grades, and he has one. So I do feel like he's an impact player, a future perennial all-pro type talent. And I just feel like when you look at what he brings to the table, now keep in mind, this is coming from someone that didn't want the Bears to move off Justin Fields because he's progressing in the right direction. I just wanted them to add more talent around him. I was even making a case, double up on wide receiver at number one and at pick 9, right? So now that they moved on from him, you move on for a guy that, yes, I have a higher grade on Williams than I did on Fields. So I do feel like Williams is a game changer, just like Fields was. But for this particular question, Williams has, and I see why people make the Mahomes comparison. The element of his game that's just like Mahomes is the fact that he sees the entire field. So We know this where, you know, a receiver, just because you're in the route doesn't necessarily mean you're in the progression. So you may have four receivers out in a route, but it's really a two-man route. And the other two guys are running these for the love of the game routes, right? They're just trying to pull coverage away, right?
Yeah.
And so, but the problem with a guy like Caleb Williams is that, and you see this with Mahomes, is that if the primary two routes are closed, these dudes on the backside know that they can just get the football if they find a way to get open. So as a defense, it is impossible to really stay locked in on all eligible available targets. And we've seen time and time again, Caleb Williams do this on film at USC and Patrick Mahomes do this for the Chiefs where, yeah, a guy may be breaking free deep down the field. Most quarterbacks are like, dang, I can't get it there. I got to chuck it and run or just got to, you know, dump it off. Nah, Mahomes, Williams, they can get it out there accurately. So you really got to play good defense and lock in and cover. So that's the type of element. He really expands that defensive umbrella, and you're going to either have to get pressure on him right away or you're going to have great coverage on the back end. And we haven't even talked about him as a runner. And that's the part that also adds another element to his game. He may not be as fast as Justin Fields, but he's a little bit more shifty, and he's capable of breaking a 50-yard run. So he is the ultimate package at the position. So I think he is the reason why. And they've done a good job of adding good pieces around him now so he can step into a situation and play well right away.
And you mentioned those pieces, Keenan Allen being the latest acquisition at the wide receiver position. Now, he is in his early 30s, I think I want to say 30, 31, and he is in the final year of his contract, which is one of the reasons I think the Chicago Bears should seriously consider it with the number 9 pick, picking one of the three receivers if one of those three guys falls to the Bears at number 9. How do you list those three wide receivers? Because I think you've got a surprise. Everyone thinks it's Marvin Harrison Jr., but I'm not sure that you have Marvin Harrison Jr. as your number one receiver in the guide. Am I right?
That's correct, because I grade guys by position, right? You can't grade Cole Beasley and Randy Moss as the same because they're playing different positions, right?
So
I grade by X receiver, Z receiver, slot receiver, and I have a section called big inside guys. It's kind of a cross between a slot and an X, right?
Okay.
So my number one X is Rome Odunze. And when I say X receiver, I'm talking about guys that I feel like are consistently able to beat bump press. And mm-hmm. so they're good route runners. They're able to beat press, and they have all the requisite athleticism and all that stuff like that. But primarily, they're able to beat bump press consistently. My Z receivers are guys that are a little bit not as polished as beating bump press, but they're a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more athletic, you know, explosive. That's where I have Marvin Harrison. He's my number 3 Z behind Malik Nabers and behind Keon Coleman. Slot, number 1, that's self-explanatory. That's Ladd McConkey, who can play inside or outside. So he could even be a flanker if need be. He is dynamic. And so that's how I have those guys. And inside receiver, I like Tajon Palmer out of UAB, probably a day 3 guy, but very good at the catch point. Had a really good all-star game circuit. But that's how I have those guys. And people may be shocked to see Harrison at 3. I just feel like he needs a little bit more work and get it off bump press, cleaner consistently. People will say the separation isn't there, and you can see that a little bit on film. He has great hands, elite level hands. So you like that about his game, because that's like prerequisite number 1 for receiver. You better be able to catch. And he has that. And I have the same grade on him that I would have on Keon Coleman. And so people may think, oh, he's your number 3, but you don't think he's good. Like, now I have an 82 grade on him. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way the grades are breaking down, that's a Pro Bowl player. So I do feel like Harrison is a very good receiver. And if the Bears chose him, wouldn't bat an eye. You know what I'm saying? Because any one of those guys I named, they could take, and I would be fine with.
That's awesome. So with the number 9, do you think, if you're general manager of the Chicago Bears, how would you weigh trading back to acquire more picks? The Bears currently only have 4 picks, 75 and 122 are the 2 other picks they have. Now, I've been saying for the last month or two, I wouldn't mind at all if they just didn't make any trades, stood there and picked those 4 players, because I don't think that the draft is as strong on day 3 as it has been in past years. And I have to, full confession here, I'm basically repeating what I've heard people who I trust say, but you have evaluated these day 3 prospects, unlike most people in the entire world. So is the draft weaker on day 3? And if it's not, would you consider trading out of 9, especially if there's one of those big receivers there, and acquiring more picks, including, a day 2 pick and 1 or 2 day 3 picks?
It depends. Clearly there's levels between a top 10, the top 10 receivers that we're talking about and guys on day 3. So there's gaps between, what you could potentially have versus what you would get on day 3. Mm-hmm. And I'm always of the mindset, if you have a chance to pick in the top 10, stay there. The only time I would have entertained the Bears trading down would have been if Fields was still on the roster and they traded 1 to about 3, right? Mm-hmm. And picked up another first round pick and probably a second round pick this upcoming draft, or this draft, and kind of played the game that way, right? And took a receiver at 3 and then, took another receiver at 9 or took a defensive player at 9 or then traded 9 down a little bit and got some more picks. So, but mm-hmm. right now you have no room to wiggle in terms of your movement, because you got to take the quarterback at one, and at nine, you kind of have to take the guy there who's going to be one of the top receivers. Because here's the thing, what worries me about the top 10 in terms of receivers, you have to worry about the Cardinals at four and the Chargers at five and the Giants at six. Mm-hmm. So all three could theoretically take wide receivers. And, you know, I mean, heck, even the Titans could be on, they could take a Brock Bowers or could take a receiver. So you're kind of like, okay, man, that could be four elite guys gone. Because I feel like whoever starts to run on receivers, you know, you'll expect to see like three guys go right after that, right? Same thing with tackle. Whoever takes the first tackle, you're probably going to see three tackles go. So the Bears are sitting at nine and really have to worry about Cardinals, Chargers, and Giants. So now, who do you think is going to take a receiver? This is why you rely on your intel. So it's probably hard. If those elite talents at receiver are gone, then I agree with you. Maybe go from nine to about 11 or 12. Because the thing, you look at 11 and 12 and 13, mm-hmm. all three of those guys could be looking for quarterbacks. So you have some wiggle room, but very slim. And it all depends on who the Cardinals take at four, the Chargers take at five, and the Giants take at six.
Talking with Emery Hunt, and I got to tell you, man, this is so much fun listening to your opinion and your viewpoints on this. And let me remind people that you can find his draft guide at footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide and his YouTube channel, youtube.com/footballgameplan. All right, so the Bears are in need of a pass rusher. And Matt Eberflus said, you know, I don't care where it comes from, the middle or the outside. You know, we need to put pressure on the quarterback. In fact, almost his exact words is what we're going to do is look for ways to help the quarterback or hinder the opposing team's quarterback. Mm-hmm. So from a pass rusher perspective, when you're looking at defensive tackles and outside edge players, who are some of the guys that you think could be, you know, would you invest in number nine pick on a Dallas Turner in this offense, or would you wait till number 75? Could there potentially be a defensive tackle or an edge rusher available to affect the opposing team's pass rusher? What are your thoughts?
I think D tackle is thinner than edge rusher. Mm-hmm. Although if I'm at pick nine and we just talked about the scenario where maybe two receivers go, three receivers go four, five, and six, right? Nine almost has to be an edge rusher because you have your choice of one of the elites, whether that's Leiatu Latu, who's my number one 4-3 defensive end. So some people see as an edge, see as a 4-3 end. Doesn't matter. You still like him as, you know, getting a quarterback. My number one edge rusher is Jonah Ellis out of Utah, pure edge rusher. My number two 4-3 defensive end, some people may say edge. So again, it doesn't really, it's splitting hairs here, semantics. Right. Jarrett Verse, you know, Dallas Turner would be my number two edge. So right there at nine, you're talking about some elite pass rushers. And after that, there are drop-offs. So you might start the run on edge players right there at nine. So if you have a chance to get an elite pass rusher, bookending Montez Sweat, I say go for that more so than receiver. So that kind of answers your earlier question on whether or not you take the receiver at nine, or do you wait to maybe day three? You can get a solid receiver day three, depending on, you know, there's always somebody that falls, and they're probably falling for a reason. Maybe it's a character risk or injury concern or whatnot. And you can always kind of find a way to get back into the early day two, trading future assets. So if you really want a guy. But edge rusher, I do feel like there is a drop off from those premier guys that I just listed to the next tier. So you probably are going to be stuck right there at nine, not stuck in a bad way, but stuck in with a good problem to have, you know, taking one of these elite pass rushers, because that's what I would do. In fact, I had three scenarios I put out on CBS in October. This is when the Bears had the first and fourth pick. And this was me under the assumption they were going to keep Justin Fields. Hey, take the receiver at one, or, you know, people was like, oh, you could trade. Yeah. Okay, cool. Whatever. But take the receiver first. Then at four, take the Leiatu Latu or Jarrett Verse or someone like that, right? I was even saying, hey, you could take the receiver at one, or take, you know, the tackle for Shanu or someone like that at four, right? So now at 9, it's like, okay, man, we didn't know the Chargers were going to blow up their whole receiving core. So that takes away some options there. And so 9 could be the potential spot for pass rushers. Because as I went to grade the pass rushers, it's like, okay, well, yeah, these are the guys that you kind of want. Everyone else, you could kind of wait to get in terms of rushing the quarterback. But these guys here, if you have a chance to get them, you probably want to snatch them.
Now, let's turn our attention to the offensive line, because the Bears offensive line, you know, is interesting. It seems like it's a line that currently has a lot of potential to be a solid group. You got the young kid at left tackle, Braxton Jones. You've got Tevin Jenkins at left guard. They've picked up the Sheldon, the center from the Rams. It appears that he or Bates from Buffalo is going to be the center at right guard. They have the veteran Nate Davis, who didn't have an impressive first year with the Chicago Bears because unfortunately, he lost his mom during preseason and so missed most of camp. And then during the season, he suffered an injury or two that ruptured his season, so to speak. And then at right tackle, you've got the big number one pick from last year, Darnell Wright. Those are the starters, the projected starters for this year. But everyone seems to think that we being the Bears, should bolster this offensive line. Now, when I look at guards for you, the very your guy, Javion Cohen, 6'4", 324 pounds out of Miami. This is a guy I've never heard of. So tell me about Mr. Cohen and why you like him so much. You've got him as your number one guard.
It's consistency for me and the athleticism. And so he is so strong at the point of attack. And I'm talking about someone that is able to keep his hands inside and combine that with the core strength, consistently able to get movement. And that's what you want on your interior offensive line. Folks always talk about the tackle position, and Big Tackle has done a great job with, you know, propaganda in terms of getting people to think like you have to have tackles. Really, you better have guards and a guard be excellent, because any quarterback worth his salt could step up in the pocket and make a play. If you don't have guards and a guard play be excellent, there is no stepping up. You know what I'm saying? And there's nowhere to go. And so you can't even run the ball without your guards and a guard being excellent. So that's why I feel like people need to really focus on investing heavily in those three, because it's, I mean, and Cohen to me was consistent on tape. Now, Connor Beebe is funny because Beebe is just as good as Cohen, but Cohen is more athletic. However, on the move, Beebe is more athletic and gets out there consistently and smoothly than Cohen does, despite not being as athletic as Cohen. So whether it's Cooper Beebe or Javion Cohen, I like both guards. And I want to see the progression of Jatari Carter as well. I'm a big fan of him coming out of Southern, see how he's continuing to grow and develop. I think the Bears, to your point, did a great job of bolstering the depth behind their frontline starters, because that's where they got beat up a little bit last year. You know, guys are stepping in. They didn't really have the depth that they have now in conjunction with their frontline starters. So, yeah, you can always add a guy, whether it's Cohen. Some people see Cohen as a day three prospect. Cool. I don't care where you draft guys. I only care about can the guy play, because I view any draft slot as a potential starter, right? So if you get a guy on day three, hell, if he's better than the guy we drafted on day one, start to do it on day three. You know, I only worry about the evaluation. So whether Cohen is still there on day three, I would see it as a great value because I knew he could play.
I love it. I love it. And when you say when you talk about the importance of guards, if we were in the same room, man, I would fist bump you, because I've been preaching that for like 10 years now. And you know, there's a lot of football fans still have this paradigm, is that the most important player on the offensive line is the left tackle, because he's usually protecting the blind side. But I'm telling people, the ball's coming out so quick now that the left tackle many times doesn't even have an opportunity to disrupt the play, because the ball is already out. It's the middle where defensive coordinators have adjusted to today's offensive attacks by rushing, getting pass rushers up the middle. And even Eberflus has been saying it for Bears fans, is you need to get a pass rush up the middle, at the very least maybe flush the quarterback out and have edge players who then can finish the play. So I really appreciate you expanding that thought for us. When you talk about offensive tackles, The one that I like the best, if the Bears decided to go with offensive tackle in round one, I like the kid out of Washington because of his versatility. I truly believe he could be an outstanding left tackle, and I have still a lot of faith in Braxton Jones. But if something were to happen where he doesn't progress as expected, Troy can come in there at left tackle and play. And if something happens with one of the guards, Troy can go in there. His versatility is outstanding, and he would be worthy, especially because maybe 9 is a little too rich, maybe 11, 12, 13 for Troy. What are your thoughts on Troy Fontenot? He's your highest rated offensive tackle.
Yeah, he is outstanding. And, you know, you heard a lot of people talk about kicking him down inside. But it's funny because when you're watching his tape at Washington, you're watching him versus the edge rushers at UCLA. You're watching him versus the edge rushers at Utah. You're watching him versus the edge rushers at Oregon. You're watching him versus that defensive front at Oregon State. It's like, damn, he's playing excellent at tackle against all these guys that's probably going to go in the first round. Like, leave his butt at tackle, right? And again, we've seen the Chargers do this with their left tackle, who was also undersized. The kid from Rashawn Walker from Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Until proven otherwise, leave him where he's dominated, right? If he's showing he can't handle tackle, then yeah, we could talk about putting him at guard. But you're right. Like, I mean, he's so doggone good and, you know, so doggone efficient and effective and athletic. The athleticism at left tackle that he brings opens up your entire playbook. Rarely do you see teams run weak side, right? Mm-hmm. They want to, you know, they tend to be right-handed. They want to run to where the tight end is, get that extra guy to help you block or whatnot. And teams generally will run right side, right? They rarely run weak side unless there's a dog at left tackle and or some athleticism. And he provides both. So I get it. You know what I'm saying? That's someone that I like a lot. He was, you know, clear cut my number one tackle because of that athleticism and how consistent he was against those teams that had those edge rushers that we've talked about that played in the Pac-12.
So I want to see if you match my philosophy regarding the defensive backfield. Talk to me about the importance of cornerbacks and safeties in today's NFL. I think that their value is higher than ever before in the National Football League because, again, it's very difficult for a pass rush to get to the quarterback, and so you've got to have a group of defensive backs who can cover and play in unison so that everyone knows what they're doing. So you need smart, athletic players. What are your thoughts on today's defensive backfield and the profile that you have for safeties and corners?
Well, here's the thing. And this is my philosophy.
Okay.
And it's the battery. The closer you are to the ball, the more impact you have on the game. So that's why you need your guard, center guard, your D tackle, your linebacker, your free safety, your quarterback, your running back to be excellent because everything else will fall into place. Mm-hmm. Think about San Francisco's defense. We don't even know their corners, but we know Fred Warner. We know what happened to their secondary when Homeboy was out with the injury, Hufanga, you know, the safety, right? So if you are strong down the middle, I'm talking about from running back to free safety, you will be playing great offense and great defense. And so for corner, and this is it's kind of mirroring what we've seen from receiver, you know, the influx of the amount of talented receivers that are able to hit the ground running as pros. Same thing for defensive backs. Because they're getting a lot of time on task. You know, back in the day, it was maybe 65-35 run to pass ratio in college. Well, now flip that. Everybody's throwing the ball often. And so you're getting a lot of time on task. So these guys now have seen a lot of routes, they've covered a lot of routes, and they're a little bit more apt to really match up. And that's why I've kind of separated the position on the back end. In terms of the safety position, you know, it used to just be free safety, strong safety, but now you break that into a third and you got what I like to call combo safeties, guys that can play either safety spot, but can also double down inside in the slot and give you good run support there, but also cover these big wide receivers or athletic tight ends that you see now all throughout these offenses, right? So you may have a Travis Kittle that comes out there like, you know what, we don't want to put a corner on him because they're going to run all day at him. So we got to put somebody that's apt to be strong in the alley versus the run. which is a safety, but also has good cover skills, which can be a guy that can match up in coverage like a corner, but also play safety. That's where these guys come in. So, and you see a lot of crossover, because even though I break them down to my guide from boundary side, which is the short side of the field, or the field side, which is the field, the wide side of the field, and slot corner, there's no boundary or field at the NFL level because the hash marks are right there in the middle. So the entire game is played in the middle of the field. So you got to be able to really mirror and match up well. The slot is probably one of the more stronger positions that you need, and that could be either a corner or one of these safeties.
I love the way you provide context to the position groups, and you make it easier for us average fans to understand. I want to talk about the safety group because we lost Eddie Jackson. His contract was not renewed. He was actually dropped. He's still in the contract. And the Bears have signed Kevin Byard, who is still playing well, veteran safety, but he probably has a year, maybe 2 years or at tops 3 years with the Chicago Bears. And so I am of the belief that you should have a safety tandem that works well together and basically, you know the back of each other's hands and so forth. And so I wouldn't mind seeing the Chicago Bears add a combo safety, as you described it, on this team. You've got some really interesting names, including Trey Taylor out of Air Force. Can you tell us a little bit about this 6 foot, 213-pound safety from Air Force?
Yeah, it's funny because no one talks about a dude that won the Jim Thorpe. I felt like, you know, this is the best defensive back in the nation award, and he has gone unnoticed. It's bizarre. And he is someone that provides, obviously, you know what you're getting when you're getting the guy from the Service Academy. Great intelligence, fundamentally sound football player. So he won't take risks, which means you won't get beat back deep. And he's a great open field tackler. But with him, he brings also a knack for making a play on the ball. And that's someone that can kind of be moved around. Taylor was one of my favorite prospects to watch throughout the college football season and talk about. And then when I saw him at the East-West Shrine Bowl, I was like, okay, he definitely matches up athletically. He can do what you require him to do. And it's good that he played in the Mountain West, because you're going to see a little bit of everything in the Mountain West. Teams that want to, you know, line up with double tight and run the ball. Teams that want to go up tempo and air you out. Teams that want to, you know, spread the field and kind of make you make individual plays in space. And he was able to check all those boxes. So he is someone that can be a game day piece. We know he has the intelligence and the discipline to play back deep. And that's been the biggest key when you're grading these safeties: discipline. You know, who can do their responsibility to the last possible moment before they make a break on the football, and Taylor is one of those guys.
I did it. I had it on mute because I had to blow my nose. One of the things that I've been toying around with is surprise picks by Ryan Poles. A lot of people seem to think, oh, we're set at the tight end position now because we've got Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett. And those two guys are going to be great under Shane Waldron's offense. There's no doubt. But I still believe that this team needs an inline blocking tight end. And so I've been looking at guys like A.J. Barner out of Michigan. Tell me a inline tight end coming out in this draft class that you think could be a guy who could immediately provide some blocking help for a team.
Well, my number one inline guy is Brevin Spanford out of Minnesota. He came in at 6'6", 267. Moves well for a guy that size. And it's one of those, it's funny because I use the saying sight unseen prospects. So when you're talking about a defensive player for Utah, I don't care who he is. I don't even have to watch his film. I know he's going to be good, right? You know, offensive lineman from Kansas State, sign me up. I don't care who he is. He's going to be good. Point of attack player from Minnesota, I'm all in. And Brevin Ford is that. You know, he's an inline tight end, blocks rather well, which is the most important part of grading inline. Because I break the tight ends from inline, which means you are a very good blocker. Your H-backs, which means you're a little bit more athletic. You'll be on the move. You know, you can block well, but you can also run routes. You can even, you know, take a handoff or two. And flex tight ends, which are more your bigger wide receivers that are in tight end bodies, right? Think Jimmy Graham. That's a flex tight end type. So Brevin Span Ford is someone that blocks rather well, solid route runner. So he's going to give you that, still give you what you want in the passing game, and has good dependable hands. So he's checking the standard boxes for what an inline tight end is supposed to be. And if you're talking about pairing guys up with, you know, a flex tight end in, Gerald Everett, or, you know, sort of a H back move tight end in Cole Kmet, man, this would be your perfect third tight end, which is what you kind of need in today's game.
There you go. All right. Before we finish up, I just want to ask you some general NFL questions about this draft. What do you see as the biggest storylines in this 2024 NFL draft? What are the things that when you start, you know, watching or covering it, you're going to say, okay, I want to know what's going to happen here. I want to know what's going to happen here. Here's an intriguing story. Share some of your thoughts about this 2024 draft for us.
Where the next group of quarterbacks are going to go. And I'm talking about the Spencer Rattlers. I'm talking about the Michael Pratts out of Tulane. I'm talking about the his name slips my mind from Florida State. Jordan Travis, where he's going to go. I'm interested to see where those guys are going to go, because I feel like those guys can be those hidden starters in the draft class. I also am interested, bias probably, because I was a former running back, but who's going to be the first running back taken? Is the team going to take, you know, Jonathan Brooks coming off of an ACL first before a Braylon Allen out of Wisconsin, or, you know, maybe Marshawn Lloyd out of USC? Who's going to be that first running back taken? It won't probably be in the first round, which I can concede that fact. This is not last year where you already knew, you know, it was Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, but who's going to be the first back? And I'm also interested to see how teams that usually ace the there's two things. One, who usually ace the day three, which are, you know, like the Rams, Steelers, Ravens. And also coupled with that, we hadn't seen the Rams pick in the first round since they moved to LA. I feel like, right? The last time they did the first time was probably St. Louis, you know, or just when they got to LA with Jared Goff. So I'm interested to see what the Rams do in the first round, because they are usually trading away those first round picks, because they tend to ace the back end of the draft, day three, and the undrafted free agent. And I'm also always excited to see, you know, where the small school guys go. How many will we see this year? I think the first one off the board will be probably the tackle out of Yale, Kieran Amagaji. Fine football player, fantastic athlete and tackle. But I want to see how many FCS guys, D2 guys, HBCU guys we get in the draft. That's always a fun story to watch.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite from the small schools, HBCU or any other small school that you are rooting for in this draft?
I'm rooting for, and this is, you know, pounding the table for two guys. One, because I've called a lot of games for them, so I'm biased here. But Jaden Sheridan, the running back out of Monmouth, 5'7", 190, explosive player. I think Keaton Mitchell helped him out a lot. By doing what he did last year at his size, that people will say, okay, we can use this guy as a, especially with the new kickoff rule, because you kind of want someone back there that has good vision, good running back skills, because now you can kind of create a little blocking scheme up front with your kick return, and someone that could pop open a hole, and then boom, he could shoot through it. I think Sheridan would be outstanding as a pro. And then on the defensive side, he may not get drafted, but I'm just excited for the kid, because I've, you know, every game I've called for him at Morgan State, he's been phenomenal. Big play capability as a slot corner, and that's Javion Morton. You know, 5'8", about 185. Wherever the ball is at, he's where the ball is. And it's always a sense of timing, too. Like, man, Morgan State needs a big play defensively. Here's Javion Morton turning the ball over. And if quarterbacks are late and outside on those out routes, he's taking that back the other way. So I'm just a big fan of him as a football player. And he may not get drafted, but I'm excited to see where he signs as a free agent.
You know, I'm so glad that you brought up the point regarding kickoff returns, because I've been asking this question to a lot of our guests, and I'd love to get your point of view on it. How are these new special teams roles, basically the kickoff, how could that potentially impact draft plans? What type of players? Are we going to see more tight ends on squads? Are we going to see more fullbacks? So what are your thoughts about the new kickoff rule and how that might impact player selection?
Yeah, you're going to see a lot more guys that can run and guys that are great at making open field tackles. So let's take a linebacker that I'm very excited about, maybe a day three guy, and Jamal Hill out of Oregon, who was a former safety that moved to linebacker this year. So still a neophyte in playing linebacker. He's about 5'11", maybe 220 pounds, right? 4'4", 40-yard dash. That would be an ideal person on kickoff coverage because he has the speed to get down there, and we know he's a great open field tackler because he's played safety and linebacker, right? You won't see the big, you know, beefy offensive lineman or defensive lineman on kickoff team. You better have a lot of tight ends or athletic outside linebackers or athletic defensive ends that can run, because now you can create blocking schemes for better than just, hey, you know, let's meet here and then wedge out and go block, you know, the guy in your area, right? Mm-hmm. Because now you get creative with how you could design certain, you know, blocking fronts, almost like a run play, to where you can create a lane for someone, like you could create a hole how you would in a run game. So why not have someone, because usually your kickoff returner, and this still could be the case, your kickoff returner was someone that had explosive speed, great acceleration, that could just, because it's about hitting the lane and going. And your punt returner was the one that had more shiftiness and agility because it's all reaction, right? Now, if they had both skill sets, that's an elite return specialist. But, you know, that's two separate positions, right? But now for a kickoff returner, you kind of want someone that has a bit of a running back background, as used to, like, reading holes, you know, setting up blockers, and then able to, you know, gear down and then explode and burst through a lane. So it's going to be fascinating to watch how it is. I love it because it creates more jobs for a lot of these guys, and we're not phasing out special teams. We're actually making it an important part of the game, and now you can get a little bit more creative in how you approach it.
I love it too. I was talking to Eric Galco, and one of the guys that he brought up that could be a really rising player on draft boards because of the new rule is Isaac Garendo. He's in your draft guide. Quickly, give me a capsule of your thoughts on him.
He reminds me a lot of Michael Turner, and lockstep with Eric in thinking about that. Because remember, Michael Turner was a kickoff returner on the Chargers before he started to get reps at, you know, tailback, and then ultimately got the starting job out in Atlanta, right? And mm-hmm. Garendo was someone that returned kickoffs at Wisconsin before he transferred to Louisville. And he's a big back. He's 6 feet, 220 with explosive speed. And so he's used to handling kickoff duties, number one. So he checks that box. He has the explosive speed we just talked about. He checks another box. And he's been a fantastic running back, so he knows how to set things up and really burst through a lane. Checks another box. So he would be, to Eric's point, an excellent return specialist.
Emery, I can't tell you how much fun I've had the last 45 minutes listening to you talk about football. And again, I'm so proud of you and how your career continues to ascend. Bigger and even better things, I'm sure, are on the horizon for you. Let's talk a little bit about how our followers can follow you and where they can purchase your materials. Take it away.
Follow me on Twitter or X at FBallGamePlan. That's easy to remember. And subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/footballgameplan. But the draft guide is one of my favorite things that I've been able to produce. I'm so proud of it because of how it's become popular and how you explain how you use it and how valuable you find it. And it's not only valuable. And here's the thing. It's not just valuable for the draft in terms of who my guy picks and who's, you know, and where he has a scout report, but it's also valuable for you to scout your opponent's draft. And we know the NFL rosters are transient. So when guys pop up on the, you know, roster during the preseason and or during the regular season, best believe there's a report on the guy in the guide. And if you like to throw a little shekels on the game, think about this. Like I said earlier, if you've purchased the draft guide from 2020 to now, you have over 4,300 scouting reports. Now, the NFL only has, what, 1,500 players in it? But a lot of these guys are playing in the CFL and the United Football League right now in the spring. So what am I saying by saying all this? It helps you with betting, because if you know who's on rosters, you have a better idea of who's good, who has a better team, who's going to win the game. It helps make you a smarter, more productive wagerer. And if you follow me on Sportsline, you know I have a winning record, NFL, XFL last year, USFL last year, CFL last year, and FCS. So you kind of want to get the guy because it kind of helps you, you know, become better all across the board. So again, footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide.
Love it. Love it. You are the man, Emery. Thank you so much for spending 47 minutes and 45 seconds with us. Really appreciate it. We'll be talking to you again soon. Take care, Emery. I got to tell you, man, talking football with that guy is so much fun. He, you know, he's the type of guy that you want to have a beer with and talk football. And yet his acumen far exceeds anything that I would ever come close to. But the way he explains the game is easy to grasp. It's easier to understand the complicated game of professional football, college football. He makes it easier. And his draft guide does the same thing. He explains why he divides the wide receivers into different position groups, because there are differences with the wide receivers out there. So excellent job by Emery Hunt with his career, with his draft guide, and that interview I really enjoyed. Thank you, Emery. All right, let me turn our attention to Chris Long's podcast, Green Light, I believe it's called. He had on Montez Sweat, and Montez said a few things, one or two of them that caught the national media's attention. But I pulled about a half dozen or so sound bites from the show for us to react to. And the first one is, he was asked by Chris, how is this year, 2024, different than 2023?
Man, it's completely different. I mean, obviously my bank account is a little bit better. But I mean, what they say, more money and more problems. I guess I got more weight on my shoulders. I feel like a few more responsibilities. But most importantly, I think I'm approaching this offseason more different than I did last year. I guess last year I was kind of like just kind of playing my role and stuff like that. And this year I'm looking forward to leading the defense. So it's a little different.
All right. Thank you, Foster, for letting me know that my microphone was muted during that entire segment. So I am really, really sorry. So you didn't get to hear my platitudes about Emery Hunt. You didn't get to hear my thoughts on Tariq Cohen. Yeah, I was talking about Tariq Cohen during those 2 minutes where it was completely muted. So there you go. Apologize for that mistake. Hopefully you're still with us. I trust that you were able to hear Montez Sweat talk about what is the difference between 2023 and 2024. He is assuming a leadership role on this team. And that it should be. It comes with that high price contract that he now has, which he is grateful for, as you can tell in the interview. But he is also going to take on that leadership role. And it was interesting when Chris asked him, what does that look like? In a portion of the interview that I did not include. And he had a little bit of a tough time answering that because it doesn't come naturally to him. Montez Sweat is not a very talkative leader. He likes to lead by example, excuse me. And those leaders can be as effective as anyone else. But it does take some proper planning to be a leader of a football team. You have to, your very self, whether you're a coach, a captain, assistant coach, a coordinator, or one of the leaders in the locker room, you have to give some thought to how you want to lead and who especially you want to target some of your leadership skills, whatever they may be, whether it's with words or with actions or both. You want to target who to address those needs to, somebody that needs a little bit of coaching. So I pulled a soundbite from the Green Light with Chris Long podcast. And this is Montez Sweat when he was asked about Jervon Dexter.
Yeah, you're going to see.
He got shot.
Yeah, man, you're going to see, man. He's pretty good. I feel like he was still like just kind of unlocking himself, being himself. Yeah. And I think that's going to really flourish this year, bro. He's a really talented kid. He's one of those quick, real quick D tackles, but strong as hell. And it's really a sight to see. But yeah, he gonna jump out on the scene for sure.
He just gotta get his pads down. He's so big.
He is. You know, I mean, he's tall, but he's strong though. Yeah. So it's like, and I mean, another thing, like using that leverage. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You gotta learn how to, because he's a longer guy too. So he's one of those guys that can, like, any jack of trade, like, he could do it all, kind of. So he even, bro, sometimes when he came out on the edge and was making some inside moves. Yeah, man. He's pretty good.
How cool is that to hear Montez Sweat talking about Jervon Dexter in a way that makes expectations for him a little bit higher, right? Just because of he has seen him in practice play inside and play outside, which is a great thing. Of course, the Chicago Bears and many NFL teams right now value versatility, and Jervon Dexter is able to deliver on that, according to Montez Sweat. So I'm hoping that Montez Sweat continues to develop his relationship with Dexter and teach him the nuances of the game. And I'll give you an example of what are the things that he can teach him. This is Montez Sweat being asked by Chris Long about his reach, because Montez has some long arms.
What's it like, and I'm asking as a guy with T-Rex arms, what's it like being able to just reach out and touch the tackle?
Oh.
You don't know any other way, but what's it like?
I mean, bro, it's really a joy. I mean, I think being strong and all those type of things, quick and all those type of things are good, but the amount of leverage that I'm able to use, like, on my long arm and stuff and things like that, the way I can just – torque and stuff like that, it makes things a lot more easier. And really, when I came into the league, I didn't necessarily really know how to use it. And over time, I started, and I feel like I'm still developing in that aspect, but you learn how to use it more over the years.
All right. I'm sorry. I was typing a message to Foster. In fact, what I'll do, Foster, I'll just ask you, when is the next BCP program? Because I want to promote it at the end of this show. If you know that, please type it in the chat room. But yeah, wasn't that cool? Montez Sweat talking about his arm reach and the fact that he didn't really learn how to utilize it as much as he has now, and is still learning how to utilize that arm reach for leverage and for establishing different moves. In fact, if you listen to the entire podcast, he will talk about some of the moves, and then he kind of catches himself and he says, wait a minute, I don't want to give too much away. But it's a very, very interesting discussion. And Montez Sweat, as a leader now, I think he has set the expectation for us Bears fan. As a leader, he is going to take a bigger role, and let's hope that it's very, very effective. Because I do think that right now, the way the landscape looks is that the Bears are not going to be able to invest as much on defense as they have the last 2 years under Ryan Poles. It's clear that Matt Eberflus got many of his wishes on the players to help set the foundation for the Chicago Bears football team, and that this year, at least the proof being free agency, that this team is now gearing up to give Caleb Williams all of the resources he needs in order to start off really well in his rookie season with the Chicago Bears. All right, I got a little bit more Montez to share with you. This was really cool. He was asked, at what time last year in 2023, did you know that this team could be special?
Initially, when I got traded, I really didn't understand the type of defense that I really walked into. Yeah. They was only missing maybe like one or two pieces. And it was like the first game I think we played the Saints, and the defense played really good. We was without Justin Fields that game, and we lost by maybe like a touchdown. And I think that's when we went on to play the Minnesota maybe the week after, and it was like turnovers, interceptions, sacks, and it was like, damn, like, I really got a good group of guys around me. And Flus was teaching nothing but turnover, 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 turnover. And it was like we was getting the ball turned over. So it was crazy. I was really in shock because I didn't know what I was really walking into. Just based off the record.
In that game.
How interesting is that? You know, when I heard that, I had a couple of thoughts. Number one, Matt Eberflus is having an impact on these players. Because we can't sit here at any point. I don't remember. Maybe somebody in the chat can correct me. And I apologize. Usually have my eye on the chat much closer than tonight. But because I'm the main host, the only host tonight, it's a little harder for me. But if anyone knows at any point that they detected that this team had quit on its head coach, let me know. Maybe at the end of the season last year in Eberflus's first season, because it was clear by then that the team was headed towards tank. You know, and so there were perhaps, you know, they detected that and how Eberflus was talking to them and so forth. But in 2023, they did not at all, that I remember, look like a team that had quit. And when Montez Sweat says that Eberflus was preaching over and over and over again turnovers, hey, that is part of good coaching. A head coach's number one priority, maybe not number one, but really high up there, is proper communication. Communication in a very effective way so that the listener hears it, understands it, and then executes what's being told to him. And so if Eberflus is up there talking about turnovers, and the assistant coaches, coordinators, and so forth are putting plans in to help with turnovers, that's the mark of a good, solid coaching system. So when I had heard Montez Sweat say that, I said to myself, that is good. Now, hopefully, you know, he'll be coming into the quarterback room and the offenses room and saying touchdowns, so that we can start scoring touchdowns at a rate that is, you know, at least equal to what the average NFL team does. So now the last soundbite that I have, again, this is from Chris Long's podcast, which you could find just about anywhere. These clips are from his YouTube channel, Green Light with Chris Long. He's Montez is asked about his expectations for 2024. And this is the soundbite that's captured headlines throughout social media and some news websites.
Man, I mean, of course, every year the goal is to go get a Super Bowl. But I think, honestly, I mean, we want to win a division, of course. We want to win division. That's the goal.
That's where it starts, and that's going to be a good division, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Jordan Love changed the whole landscape.
You know, right now, man, I'm not losing to Green Bay this year. I can't do it, man. I'm not losing to Green Bay this year, man. We done created a real rivalry over there. I got some guys, Keyshawn Preston over there. Rashawn Gary is a friend of mine, so we're going to get after it.
Now, for those of you listening to the audio podcast of this show, I got to tell you that Montez Sweat, even before Chris Long brought up Jordan Love, you could tell by his body language, his being Montez Sweat, that he was thinking about Green Bay. I swear to you, if I'm wrong on this, I don't know how to prove that I'm wrong other than asking Montez, but it's obvious that he's thinking about them, because when he was talking about the division and winning the division, and then he just jumps in and says, I'm not going to lose to Green Bay. It was pretty obvious that that was on his mind during the earlier part of that question and when he was answering it. Again, this gives me great hope, because truly one of the it's become like an emblem, I don't have the right word, but one of the things about the Chicago Bears and the NFC North is you got to beat the Green Bay Packers. They have, for decades now, proven themselves to be the gatekeeper. And I know the Detroit Lions, Don Burr is in the chat room. I know the Detroit Lions have been were the division winners, and all signs point to them continuing to play at a high level because they've got some excellent pieces. But for the Bears, it is still the Green Bay Packers. I mean, we beat Detroit last year, 1 out of 2 games, but we continue to lose to the Green Bay Packers. I can't tell you, you know, how unsettling, how upset I was game one of the 2023 season when the Bears lost so badly to the Green Bay Packers. It was a clear sign that this team still has not progressed. But listening to Montez Sweat talk about how badly he wants to beat the Green Bay Packers, and if he's going to be a team leader, that's a hell of a good sign. I got more to talk about. I just want to take a quick look at the chat room here and see if people are asking anything that I should address. I think we're good. A lot of people having great discussion. It's like a real bar room where there's one major discussion happening somewhere, but there's a lot of satellite type discussions. And of course, Don Burr is in there, you know, bragging about the Lions. And we all take that with a very, very small grain of salt, about the size of his penis. No, what did I just say? I shouldn't say stuff like that. This is Draft on Tap, not Bare Their Souls. Anyway, all right, let's move on. There's a few more things that I want to share with you before we get out of here. All right, Mike Florio, on his Pro Football Talk website, wrote an article about the Atlanta Falcons might lose their eighth overall draft pick of the first round because they've been caught tampering. And it's been pretty simple. Kirk Cousins, at his introductory press conference, said a bunch of things that said, yeah, they were tampering. In fact, I think I got the graphic here from Florio's article. Let's see here. Cousins has admitted he spoke with the team's head athletic trainer the day before the team was allowed to speak to him. He possibly spoke with the director of player personnel, Ryan Pace, before the team was allowed to speak to him. He participated in the recruitment of former Bears receiver Darnell Mooney during the negotiating window. And whatever else the NFL might have discovered by reviewing text messages and other evidence, that's what they're doing now, including whether the team knew about the efforts of tight end Kyle Pitts to recruit Cousins, efforts Pitts tried to deny once they came to light. But if they got these text messages and stuff, they're probably going to find out that it's all true. So what does that mean to us? We all know that the Falcons draft eighth and the Bears draft ninth in the first round. And so there's been a lot of speculation that the Falcons are definitely going to take Dallas Turner. They are in love with Dallas Turner. Perfect fit for their defense that they run over there, a position of need, one of the maybe the best overall athlete. I don't know about his RAS scores. I love Kent Platy's work over there, but I don't know if Turner is a 10.0. And so I would guess that he's really close. So if the Falcons, because Florio goes on to say that maybe the what the league is going to do, because they've done this in the past, is flip-flop choice draft picks with a team that was harmed by these infractions. And so perhaps then Minnesota will jump to 8, the Falcons will fall to 11. That was one of the scenarios that Florio put out there. And so what that means to the Bears, and I got this idea from Jordan Sigler of ShyCitySports.com, he said that, well, then that might Dallas Turner will fall to the Chicago Bears at number 9. If that's the case, then I ask you people in the chat room, is Dallas Turner a shoo-in? Even if one of the top 3 wide receivers, let's say it's Rome Odunze, everyone is speculating that Rome is going to be the 3rd wide receiver chosen. Although some have speculated Marvin Harrison could be, but let's just say it's Rome Odunze. So if Dallas Turner is there and Rome Odunze is there, who are you picking? People in the chat room, let me know and I'll share thoughts in the next minute or so. We are 23 hours, 46 minutes, and 15 seconds away from the first pick of the NFL draft. You know, I just find it fascinating that the Bears could be in a position to really turn their defense into potentially a top 5 defense in 2024 if they pick Dallas Turner. I've been saying it all along. If Jervon Dexter can't provide that inside pass rush, and we just heard Montez Sweat talk about Dexter. And we've seen video of Dexter. He looks jacked. He's got a six-pack. He's got muscles bulging out of his arms that are above his ears when he goes like this. He is looking unbelievable. And we know what Montez Sweat can offer. If you add Dallas Turner to that other pass-rushing position and you get, you know, Andrew Billings playing Andrew Billings style of football that got him an extension with the Bears. And you get Zach Pickens making a leap from his so freshman year with the Bears. And then all of a sudden the defensive line doesn't look as bad. And we could then have that top defense that the Bears really need. And that could be even a bigger help to Caleb Williams than another wide receiver. But here's the thing. Keenan Allen is here only on a one-year contract. And I will be shocked if Keenan Allen is extended, if his deal is extended. So if you bring in Roma Dunze, or if Malik is there, or God help us, if Marvin Harrison is there at number nine, then all of a sudden Caleb has the opportunity to have a wide receiver that he will grow up with in the NFL. And then while he is growing up, he's got Keenan Allen for a year. He's got DJ Moore for at least 2 years. That could be the best scenario to ensure that you're properly developing your quarterback. Because my definition of developing a quarterback in the NFL, give him weapons. Give him an offensive line that can block. Give him receivers that can catch. Give him running backs that can make explosive plays. That's how you develop a quarterback. Yeah, you need a quarterback guru to help, you know, with throwing mechanics and installing the playbook and so forth. Yeah, but what have we missed the most with the Chicago Bears organization? We have missed that other part of developing a quarterback that people rarely talk about, which is weapons, protection and weapons. So it's a tough choice if Dallas Turner is there. Or in some cases, you know, some people will say Latu could be the guy. But I personally think because of the speed that Dallas Turner represents, that he brings into this league, he's the guy you want. Because these other rushers on the Chicago Bears, they're going to make that quarterback run. And more often than not, that quarterback runs to his right side. And guess who can chase down any quarterback in the National Football League? Maybe even Lamar Jackson. That is Dallas Turner. So that's my little rant there. Okay, let's see. James Hunter says, would love a Dunze guy. Is a beast, but hard to pass a guy like Turner when he is in a need, when he is in need this year. I hear you, James. And you know what? I've got I got an eye on the 2025 draft. I think it's important when you're making decisions. Greg, I think, doesn't agree with this, but I do think it's important when you're building a team to have dynastic success. And in the case of the Bears, I'm not saying, you know, 4 Super Bowls in 5 years or whatever. I'm just saying, get us into the playoffs so that we have a chance to win 4 out of 5 Super Bowls. You know, when you're building a team like that, sometimes you got to look down the line, 2025, 2026. You certainly are with the salary cap. You have to in today's NFL. You got to look ahead. So I hear what you're saying, James. Good thought. Levante says, it's not a tough decision at all. Take the 1,600-yard receiver. Yes. You know, and what Rome delivers is, I love it when Rome said, I don't look at it as 50-50 balls. I look at it as 100-0 with 100 being me. That's what Rome said at the combine. And when he said that, it was love at first sound. You know, that's what you want. You know, I've been following football for years and years and years. You need guys that make great catches. You need guys that bail that quarterback out when he throws an errant pass. And Roma Dunze is telling the NFL, just throw it up, baby. What made Randy Moss so great? You heard him on the sideline talking to Dante Culpepper. Just throw it up there, baby. Just throw it up. I'll come down with it. And that's what Rome is saying. And that's what the tape says that he can do. Oh, okay. What else do we have here? Eric says, wide receivers like Rome don't grow on trees with his size, speed, and route tree. He'd be a wide receiver 1 in most years. You're absolutely right, Eric. You're absolutely right. And again, you know, I don't want to overlook what Dallas Turner can bring to this team, but I saw what this pass rush did once Montez Sweat got in here. And there, and you can still pick up Yannick Ngakoue. He's still a free agent, and I bet you he's waiting. All he wants is a 2-year contract. He wants a little security, you know, and he's tired of these 1-year contracts. So sign him to a front-loaded 2-year contract. Excuse me. So there's possibilities. If again, excuse me, there's possibilities if you walk away from this NFL draft without a elite pass rusher, and there aren't many of them, right? Or a pass rusher that is a plug and play, then there's the opportunity to at least get back to where we were in 2023 and pick up the slack from there. I wouldn't be adverse at all. I would not be unhappy if Yannick Ngakoue was re-signed for the 2024 season. All right, so what else do I got here that I wanted to share with you? Brad Biggs. You know, I like reading Brad Biggs. I know he gets a bunch of shit from fans on social media, but he is one of the, you know, the old-fashioned true reporters who does the work. You might not agree with his opinion on certain things, but he's a reporter. And he was asked on his Q&A column, which was posted a couple of days ago on ChicagoTribune.com. He was asked about the wide receivers that the Bears could potentially get with round three. With their 75th pick, because, you know, we were just talking about it. Perhaps they go Dallas Turner. Perhaps they trade down a few spots in the first round and they pick another pass rusher at Latu at 13 or something like that. So they are now looking at a wide receiver at 75. So these were the list of people that Brad Biggs supplied at ChicagoTribune.com of wide receivers who could be available in round three. Luke McCaffrey, 6'2", 198 pounds. He profiled as a day three pick, but after running the 40 in 4.46 seconds, he might move into day two. He has excellent hands and is super productive. Another guy, and this guy, Greg Gabriel, actually just posted about Jalen McMillan earlier in the day and wrote, Washington is 6'1". This is Brad Biggs writing. Washington, 6'1", 197 pounds. He played primarily in the slot for the Huskies and will have to convince teams he has more versatility at the next level. Then another player, Jalen Polk, who Danny Shimon loves at Washington. I think he liked McMillan too. Polk is 6'1", 203. He ran a 4.52 second at 40 at the combine. While Polk isn't super twitched up, he does well on contested catches and can play in traffic. And Brendan Rice from USC, 6'2", 208 pounds. Wouldn't it be nice if Caleb had an old teammate from USC? Rice has good size and length with 33-inch arms. He ran the 40 in 4.5 and had some explosive jumps in Indianapolis. Now, these were the last four. I got these out of order here. The first three that Brad Biggs listed was Javon Baker, Central Florida, 6'1", 202 pounds, an Alabama transfer. Baker has good showing at the scouting combine with a 4.54 40-yard dash and 37-inch vertical. He has good frame and vertical route running ability. Baker showed growth this past season. Malachi Corley, Western Kentucky. I know Greg has spoken highly of him. Brad Biggs writes, I'm not sure Corley will remain available at number 75, but he's interesting and built a little differently. He has a very powerful lower body, and that makes him excellent running through contact. As a result, he's excellent after the catch. His hands are a bit of a question, but he's intriguing and could be a versatile weapon in the right scheme. I think Corley is going to have a good NFL career, but the only thing that worries me is that he is a one-season success. He has not had sustained success. And he's coming from a small college. We've seen this movie before with the tight end. I'm forgetting his name now, but we saw that. But I think Corley is going to be a much better player than what the hell is his name? He usually comes to me at my age, usually comes to me about 10 seconds after I bring it up. Anyway, moving on to the third player on Biggs' list, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. It would be a little risky to wait for Leggett to make it all the way to 75, but he's a day two pick. He helped himself with a strong week at the Senior Bowl and then boosted himself further with a 4.39 time on his 40-yard dash at the combine. He has he's a bit, you know, stiff in the lower body. One knock is that he has only straight line speed. But Xavier Leggett would be a nice acquisition for the Chicago Bears at number 75. I don't think anybody could argue that. Let me move on to my next topic here. And that is, I saw somebody talking about, I'm spending less and less time on X trying to, because there's just so much craziness going on there. But I do love going on and acquiring information, information that I can think about, learn from, and share here on these shows. And apparently there's a lot of talk now about the Bears being on Hard Knocks. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, is it a good idea? Absolutely. But a lot of people are saying things like on Twitter, you know, hearing from sources. Yeah, I don't think so. I think what happened here is that Mark Silverman from ESPN 1000 wrote in a Daily Herald column. He has a column on Daily Herald, and it's titled, Sylvie, They Won't, But Here's Why the Bears Should Do HBO's Hard Knocks. Again, the headline is, They Won't, They Won't. That was the first thing. It was published a couple of days ago, and I think that's what got people to start saying, you know, sources are telling me, fuck you. Yes, Jusner did it again. I swore again. Twice on Draft on Tap. I shouldn't, you know, here. I don't think that if the Bears are even entertaining the idea of going Hard Knocks, I don't think they would release that for consumption to anybody. And this is, there's private discussions going on at House Hall regarding Hard Knocks, and most of them are negative. NFL head coaches don't particularly like it. There are very few organizations that do. There's a great column on NFL.com about possible teams that could be. Atlanta Falcons would be a good story, right? With Kirk Cousins coming in there. New Orleans Saints could be a good story, either for, you know, the preseason Hard Knocks or the in-season Hard Knocks. Any of the NFC North teams Brendan Walker wrote about. We just recently had the Detroit Lions on, but I wouldn't mind seeing them again. You know, that's a fascinating team. You know, I want to figure out where the weaknesses are. So he also wrote the Texans and Kansas City Chiefs. So that's what I got for you today. I want to let you know one other thing. There are some good shows on, I'm sure. Coach T had Lawrence Holmes from 670 The Score as his guest. So try to check them out on their podcast feed. You can find them on YouTube. Nomad Live had a show early on, and the title was Should Polls Make Jerry Jones an Offer? And I think they were talking about the pass rusher, Micah Parsons. And some other news, Equanimeous St. Brown signs with the Saints. The On Tap Sports Net, those guys, I know a couple of those guys, they just came out with their own draft guide. Go to their X site and take a look at it. And it is, that one is free. And then also Todd Walter has been named the Lockdown Sox podcast host, and we wish him a lot of luck. That's our Draft on Tap for this week. I apologize for my swearing, and we'll see you all next Wednesday. Bye-bye.